Nobody covers dog sledding like Mushing from First Paw Media. Our team of athletes, volunteers, race organizers, and mushers like Robert and Michelle Forto brings you closer to this sport. If it's happening, we are there. Live from the qualifying races in January and February, the Iditarod in March, and in the summer, Mushing takes you on the road with our team and trail tour. We connect you with a history of this sport, in-depth interviews with the top mushers, and great storytelling and breaking news all year long. Follow on mushing.com.
Hello, welcome everybody. This is Robert. I'm here with my co-host KP, and we are the Dog Driver Show here on Mushing. And today we have a guest calling in from New Hampshire. She is a dryland racer. We met briefly at the World Championships in Minocqua a few months ago. Her name is Nova Clifford. Nova, how's it going today?
Not too bad. A little rainy here in New Hampshire, but overall so good.
So far, so good. We're recording this right before Christmas here in the U.S. I don't think that we have very good snow conditions anywhere. What's it like in your neck of the woods?
It's been 50 Fahrenheit for about 3 days now, and we got an inch of pouring rain today, so not good.
Not good at all. So with that, I'm going to turn this over to Kurosh. Kurosh, what do you have for Nova?
Hey, Nova. Hello from Chugiak, Alaska. This is the first time we chat, actually. I know that I see you on social media, on Facebook. We didn't have the opportunity to race with each other or meet yet. But tell us a little bit about how you started in the sport and what you're all about, what you like to do, and we'll be having a casual chat.
Okay. So I'm a third generation musher. I've been racing in New England for my entire life. My family did dogs before me, my dad and my grandpa, all the way back to Siberian Husky racing. I race mostly pointer mixes, Eurohounds, whatever you like to call them. I started my own kennel in, I think, 2020. So it's been a couple years, getting dogs from here and there, did a couple breedings. Last summer did my own breeding, and have quite a couple up and comers for yearlings for this year. So really looking forward to getting them into the team and getting them racing. We do dry land. I've mostly been doing four dog rig lately, but dabble a little bit in everything. Usually six dog sled is my favorite, of all the facets of mushing. So that's usually what I'm peaking for, what I'm looking for dogs for, and then kind of just doing anything along the way that's fun, really.
That is awesome. When did you start racing, actually, yourself, without family members or their dogs?
I would say, I think, roughly 2020. I kind of took my... I had four dogs at the time that were family dogs, and then just kind of built up from there. So I've been training my own team since 2020. Yeah.
Outstanding. And you are in the animal care and animal health business, correct? You work in a vet clinic?
Yes, I'm a certified veterinary technician. Yep.
And did you do this because of love of the dogs and be racing and all of that, or something you wanted to do as a little girl?
Kind of all fell into place. I mean, all I know is dogs. I've done dogs my whole life, grew up with dogs. When I was in high school, I had a dog who had a thyroid issue, and I was always going into my vet, and he was a really big dog and really hard to wrangle. And the vet looked at me after like our third visit and was like, "Do you want a job? You're really good at this." So it kind of fell into place, and I've loved it every step since. I can't see myself doing anything else.
Well, you, the younger generation of the dog drivers that we are seeing who will be carrying the sport to, further than us older folks who've been in the sport for years. How old were you the first time ever on sled runners or on a rig?
So my mom likes to joke that I've been racing since the womb, because she did do a race with me when she was pregnant, 8 months pregnant. I don't really count that, but she likes to tell that story. But I did One Dog Junior as a little kid, probably, five, six, 7 years old. So, and then I waited a couple years before I did Three Dog Junior, and then from there, you know, once you get multiple dogs in front of you, it's the rest is history.
Nova, you mentioned that it goes back three generations, all the way back to Grandpa, and I know that you're in sort of a mushing hotbed there in New England. How have you seen things change over your lifetime, from back in the day with Grandpa and his racing to where you're at now with the World Championships with 200-plus entrants?
It's definitely changing. I think certainly getting more specialized. I mean, you used to see like mushing families that had 30, 40 dogs and they would just do sled racing. And now it seems to be more so growing in the small mono sports where it's people who had a high energy dog. They live in the city. They need an outlet. And then we get those people hooked. They get multiple dogs. Then they're racing, you know, 4 and 6 dog with us. So it's definitely changed. There's a lot of institutional knowledge that I think has unfortunately gone by the wayside. I'm one of like the few young people who still knows or speaks with, like, not to say my elders, but the people who were racing 40, 50 years ago, who think it's such a different world now where we're on carts, we're on bikes, we're on skis, and not just running sled or just running open class distances. There's really no or not many open class teams around here anymore. And that's kind of what I grew up with. So it's a definitely different world.
That's interesting you say that about hanging out and talking to people that have been doing this a long time. Of course, in the day of social media, everything is instant. We get a lot of our advice from people that we don't even know if they know what they're talking about, but we find out that they're sharing information. How do you think that that's changed? Just sort of the way that we're talking as a community now. Back in the day, Karosh and I talk about this all the time. We would hang out at the race, you know, the racetrack or at the clubhouse or whatever, and have potlucks and all that. Now we're loading up, getting in our truck, and we're uploading pictures to Facebook or Instagram as we're leaving the trail. It's different, isn't it?
It definitely is. And I don't want to say there's less community type feeling, but there almost is a little bit. You used to, you know, if you wanted to learn more, you would go visit someone's kennel, you would go, you know, spend a weekend with them, you would train with them. That's kind of the stuff that I value. I really enjoy going to other people's operations, seeing how they do things, picking up tips and tricks. And I feel like social media kind of connects us a little more, but takes away that value of seeing it and being there and those opportunities that, you know, I had when I was younger. And I still try to, whenever I can, if I'm traveling, go visit a kennel, go hang out with someone who knows more than me or knows different things than me. They certainly still have value.
Welcome to the Mushing Podcast. It's time for another memorable moment in mushing history. Sponsored by Peak Experience, providing experiential and team-building courses.
The year 1976 was an outstanding year for women sled dog drivers, but it was not the year that made it so. It was the woman. It took great dogs, too. But the sport of sled dog racing never recognized the difference in sex in the major classics, and as a result has produced some fine lady drivers. Outstanding among them are Donna Mudgett Gentry of Nenana, Alaska, Roxy Brooks of Fairbanks, Alaska, and Jennifer Smith, also of Fairbanks, Alaska. As with Debbie Mulberg of New Hampshire, Donna, a former New Hampshire girl, threatened to upset an all-time record of masculine dominance in the winner's circle of the Anchorage Fur Rendezvous World Championship race, toppling one of the world's most outstanding racers in the sport, George Atla of Fairbanks. It was only George's first day as a lead that prevented that from happening. Donna later went on to run in the granddaddy of Alaskan racing classics, the Fairbanks North American, and placed a very respectable 10th in a race that seldom, if ever, featured a competitive woman driver. In that same Fairbanks race in 1976, Roxy Wright Brooks followed up her win in the Women's North American Championship to earn an 8th place over many famous and well-known racing drivers. The Fairbanks run calls for two grueling 20-mile runs plus a 30-mile run in the final heat. Like Donna, Roxy has been on the runners ever since she was a youngster. Not in the unlimited class field, but in one of the most competitive emerging on the race scene, Jennifer Smith showed her heels to her male contemporaries in the Fairbanks North American 7-dog class race. Jennifer is a stewardess for Wine Airlines. Mulberg, Gentry, Brooks, and Smith have gained the attention of the international news media, as did Guthrie to auto racing. For a sport that has been struggling for such attention, the emergence of women in the prominent places on the racing scene is good, and 1977 should be an interesting year.
Robert, you're so correct about that. Nova has the opportunity of being raised, and like you see, the culture of sled dog culture as a young child, and seeing the open drivers, the bigger kennels, and all of that. A lot of the younger generation of the dog drivers we have are first generation dog drivers. You know, they started, you know, handling a dog for someone else, and it's very interesting hearing what Nova is talking about. Like, you know, when Grandpa had an open kennel and people, they valued this, you know, the chats and the experience and the expertise, and not the instant Instagram and Facebook uploads. You're so correct. No, but tell us a little bit about your dogs. How many dogs do you have in your yard, and what they are, where they are from, and what you got going in New Hampshire?
Yeah, I have 10 dogs right now, training up a string of 8. I have my former main leader, Shark, who I did most of my pro career racing with him. One of the best dogs I've ran. He's sired most of my kennel at this point. So he's kind of phasing out of his racing career and letting the young guns come up. So that's most of my kennels from him or trained by him. And then kind of just looking forward to the yearlings that I have that are out of him. I have 3 on the main team currently, just kind of seeing what they're going to produce for this year. They look pretty good. They've done a couple dry land races. So just getting the miles on them for winter, which is always a challenge here, or for anyone really.
Nova, what are the ages and also what are the lines behind those guys, and are they mainly males, females?
50-50. I've got 4 girls, 4 boys right now. Most of them go back to like the Jessica Doherty Gracer line with a little bit of open class lines mixed in. Some of it's my childhood lines from Sarah Vanderwood Imports. I do have 1 Cheesick line dog, and then my most recent puppies are out of a dog I got from Pam Richards in Ontario that she imported from Hege Ingebrigtsen in Norway. So a little bit of everything mixed in. I tend to kind of like a dog that's a little bit more open class leaning, New England open class, I suppose, that can do 10 to 15 miles. Versus kind of a specialized dog that's limited to 4 to 6 tends to be my preference.
It's very interesting the way that she's talking. You know, she's talking about specialized dogs, and I'd like to hear a little bit more about the specialized dogs you are talking about, the typical Graysters or those big boys people produce usually for, you know, your 2-mile races, your 3 or 4 mile races. Tell me more.
Yeah. I used to, when I first started building my kennel, I really liked a big male dog. I think the males work well for me. They want to please, but they're big and they slow down quick. It's rare that you get a really big male that can do everything that you want it to do, from like specialized in the 2 to 3 mile dry land stuff, but also to have the range where if you want to ask him to do 8 to 10 miles, it's a little bit harder. So I like a dog where I don't have to see their upper range. I know that they still have it, and I'm not going to max them out just because on the off chance if I want to do a 10 to 12 mile race, I have a team that can go either way. They can do a quick, fast rig dry land race, or they can do a longer, harder 8 to 10 mile run.
I really like the way you are thinking, and as a you know, open guy who or 10 dog guy who have, you know, I've done 4, 6 and all of that, but like you said, a good dog is a good dog. It doesn't need to be 90 pounds to win a race in scooter. You're so correct. Tell me a bit about your training, how you prepare your team.
A lot of it these days, unfortunately, is just the weather. Get it while you can is really racing in New England. So ideally I'm doing short runs in the fall, making them a cohesive unit. I do try to work on leader development. That's kind of my favorite thing. All my dogs will lead. I want them all to be able to lead, whether they have varying, you know, aptitudes to it or, doesn't really matter to me. I just like them all to be able to run up front. So dryland racing, I think, helps with that. It develops the smaller team stuff. And then I kind of end the dryland stuff in November and start putting miles on the dogs when I can. December tends to be pretty hit or miss with mileage. We'll go from, you know, a foot of snow 1 week to dirt the next week. So it's a little difficult to get consistent good miles on the dogs. Sometimes it's just getting a hookup when we can and hoping that sled season comes eventually. Yeah.
What are the races you are targeting this year?
I really love the Quebec circuit, so hoping to be there for February. I always put Laconia on my calendar. It goes every 2 or 3 years when we have the snow conditions. It's local race, the biggest one we have in New England. But really the reliable conditions have been in Quebec, and the competition is very good and really demands the best from you. So I do enjoy trying to get there and trying to be competitive on their circuit as well.
Very good. Well, you're a young lady. Do you do all this stuff by yourself, or you have a kennel partner, teammate, someone else who gives you a hand, mom and dad or sister, brothers?
Yeah, pretty much my mom. She's, she obviously raced, or was a handler for my dad when they were married, and now she reluctantly is back in it with me. So she's pretty much my right hand. She knows what she's looking at, running and training. She's watching the dogs while I'm, you know, obviously driving the team. So she has a lot of input for me. And anytime I'm racking my brain on what I should do for miles or how to quite peak, she's usually the one I turn to as well.
So you have the advantage of having the mom care behind the dog team, right? That's good, though.
As well, yep.
Very good, very good. As someone who, you know, you were born and raised with sled dogs, and I know that back in the days, a lot of people, they took the racing part extremely serious, and they did it almost as a duty more than a fun.
Yeah.
What is your strategy? Do you do it as like a very methodical, or you try to have fun and, you know, whatever happens, happens?
I definitely saw a lot of that seriousness as a kid. I know that seriousness is what it takes to win oftentimes, but I think for me, the joy is in the time with the dogs and getting the most out of them. And if that means that sometimes I'm not necessarily as competitive or as serious as I should be, the joy is in the fun part. So I try to take a little bit of both. I think about every move I make. I'm pretty methodical as I can be in training. But if I get to race time and it's not as serious as I think it is, or the dogs just aren't quite mentally where they should be, it's at the end of the day, I just want to have fun with them.
Tell me about a fun story or a fun thing that happened on a sled or on a scooter or something like that to you.
Oh, I feel like there's so many at this point. a couple years ago, I was scootering at a local race, and I was wearing 2 pairs of pants, but the top layer was not staying on for whatever reason. And so I finished with them around my ankles, and I could not move on the scooter because I was too afraid of falling off. So that would be one. I have a lot of gems, and I'm really not surprised by anything going wrong at this point. So off the top of my head, that's the best one I have.
That's a good one. You should put it as a profile picture. No, that would be fun. That's yeah. Awesome. Tell me a bit about the IFSS experience and the atmosphere and how it was for you.
Yeah, I think it was the first one in the United States this year. I've been to a couple in Canada. It's always really exciting to compete at that level. Everything feels so serious. And it was cool to know that it was coming for a few years, so to be able to prime the team, to know what decisions to make and how to qualify and that type of stuff, to get everything ready for it. The trip was great. Thankfully, last year's trip was a little crazy. And they did a phenomenal job. The trail was great. The atmosphere was great. Everything, no complaints.
How long ahead did you go there?
I went out, I think, 4 or 5 days. Last year when I went to the Continentals Championships, I showed up like a day or so before, and I just didn't think that that was the best decision. The dogs definitely were better to come off the truck and have a training run and get some better hydration a couple days in advance.
Did you train at all before the race on the same trails?
I didn't train on those trails. Everybody was training on those trails, so it was a little busy. And we found some local trails that were pretty quiet. So I felt like the dogs benefited from having a quieter trail and just a training run where I only had to focus on them.
And what classes did you run?
Just the four dog rig. I really only had 4 eligible dogs of age because my youngest were like 15 months. So I just had the 4. So I went in with just what I needed to run.
Oh, so yeah, you just took 4 dogs with you then?
I took the full truck. I took 9. I left my oldest here, so I had a couple extras to train during the week, but I just raced the 4.
How long of a trip was it, and did you go alone?
It was 20 hours, plus or minus with the dog drops, obviously. And I went with my friend's husband, so he did most of the driving, and I was able to focus on the dogs.
Wow. Would you do it again?
I said that I would never drive to Wisconsin again after that trip because I was so exhausted. but I've also done the drive to Wisconsin for the last 4 years, so I'm sure I'll be back.
What was the farthest you've ever been?
The farthest I've ever been is Alaska.
All right. And you drove?
Drove the whole way.
When was that, Nova?
2019.
Okay. And you raced in Fairbanks or here around us too?
I did North Pole and Elnak, yep.
I don't remember. Did I? Was I there?
I don't know if you were. I don't think I met you, so I don't know if you were.
Yeah, at 19 I ran open, so I didn't go on Elnak. But usually if I'm around, I go and watch. That's cool. Very good, very good. Anything else you want to tell us about your dogs?
I don't think so.
Hey, excellent interview there. I have a couple of questions for you. I know I alluded to them right before we hit record. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. So the first one is, what is your favorite song or musical artist?
I'm going to have to go with the generic response of Taylor Swift.
Oh, my goodness.
she's a Swiftie. Yeah.
I know. Do you have a favorite song by Taylor that you listen to on the trail?
Oh, they're all great. They're all great. My new current favorite is The Fate of Ophelia, which is from her new album.
Okay. All right. The next one is one piece of gear that you always have with you other than your phone.
A knife. Always.
What kind of knife? Is it a fixed blade, a multi-tool, what?
At the moment, I frequently lose them, so I would have said a multi-tool like 3 years ago, but currently I just bought a 20-pack of like box cutter style knives, so I always have one.
A 20-pack. I'm heading to Costco after this, so I might take you up on that and get a gross of box cutters. Okay, last question I have for you is, I know you just did this 20-hour road trip to Wisconsin.
Yep.
What is your favorite road trip snack? If you're pulling into one of those huge truck stops, what are you picking up?
So it's close, not quite a truck stop, but when I travel, I make a charcuterie box in a tackle box. So you have all the little separate areas and you put the meat and the cheese and the crackers. Perfect for every road trip.
I like that. I've seen those on Instagram. Yeah. Definitely a snack and go. And hey, it's pretty easy cleanup. Just latch it up and you're ready to go, right?
Yeah, you just close it right up and then it's ready for the next time you need a snack.
All right. Before we let you go, Nova, where are you most active on social?
Probably Facebook. I do also have a blog online as well.
What is that? What is that link? And we'll put it in the show notes.
It's Parity Racing on WordPress.
Okay. All right. Nova is our guest. Nova, let me pause that for just a second. All right, guys. Nova Clifford is our guest today, calling in from New Hampshire. And on behalf of my co-host, Karosh Parto, this is Robert Forto for The Dog Driver. We'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.
Are you a fan of the great outdoors? Do you enjoy the thrill of speed and adventure? Then listen up. Introducing Mushing, your ultimate guide to the exciting world of dog-powered sports and mushing. Whether you're a seasoned musher or just starting out, Mushing has got you covered. Get ready to immerse yourself in captivating stories of incredible sled dog races, expert training tips from seasoned professionals, and gear reviews to help you make the right choices for your team. From the breathtaking landscapes of Alaska to the snowy trails of Scandinavia, Mushing takes you on a thrilling journey through the world of dog-powered sports. Don't miss out on the latest issue, packed with exclusive interviews with top mushers, in-depth articles on sled dog nutrition, and stunning photography that will transport you to the heart of the action. So whether you're dreaming of competing in the Iditarod or simply want to learn more about this incredible sport, Mushing is your go-to resource. Subscribe now and get ready to unleash your passion for mushing. Visit our website at mushing.com or find us on your favorite podcast platform. Mushing, where the spirit of adventure meets the power of the pack.